Mm-hmm. One's the January and one's the September.
Yeah, I got it right.
You
want to
look at one and then we can switch?
Yeah.
I don't know what I did on my computer. I just clicked the link. In the email. There was a Sonali here.
Yeah, Sonali.
And who else was here? Michael Tierney was here.
Are you talking about the last meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I thought you were looking around counting.
I was making sure we had a quorum.
Oh, okay.
So it's 5:02, so I'll go ahead and call the Recycling Oversight Committee November 12th, 2025 meeting to order. I'll start with the roll call. Manajo Green.
Present.
Mayor Steve Noble is absent. Penny Coleman.
Here.
Jonathan Kaplan.
Present.
Sonali Sikand. Absent. And Poppy Cannon Reese.
Here.
Claudia Joseph.
Here.
Okay. And Vincent Moe.
Mao.
Got that. Okay, so we do have a quorum. The do you guys want to take put the minutes acceptance at the end of the meeting, or are you ready to approve the September 25th, 2025 minutes?
I think we can.
I was ready to approve.
Okay. So I'll entertain
Speaking
a motion.
For the group.
I'll entertain a motion to approve the September 25th, 2025 minutes.
And then
I first.
You first. And I'm sorry, you're Penny.
Penny.
Okay. And a second?
Poppy and Penny.
Second.
Okay. I'll learn everybody's names. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. So seven. Great. And I think the older minutes, we just need the cover sheet. They lost the cover sheet, so we just have to sign that. Okay, so just getting into our agenda. What I wanted to do is think of this meeting as sort of like a reset and regrouping. I'm new as the chair. I've been on the committee for a few years, though we don't have like a ton of meetings. So I think I still feel like I'm learning about our charter in many ways. So I wanted to just start today by reviewing our purpose and our charge. But first, I thought it would be nice on that vein if we go around and introduce ourselves and just a little bit about, you know, what brings you to this committee. So I can start as a model. My name is Erin Inouen. I live in the town of Rochester. I'm the supervisor in the town of Rochester. So I'm here as the Supervisor Association member. I was on the committee formerly before I was a town supervisor as a municipal recycling coordinator. I had that role as a town board member. I care very deeply about waste management and waste reduction and recycling issues, and that's what brought me to the committee. And I would really like to see us really dig into what we're asked to do, which is the thinking about mandated recyclables and working on that issue, and of course anything that comes to us from the UCRRA as well. So
I'm Poppy Cannon Reese. I live in Greenfield Park in the town of Wawarsing. I'm on the planning board for the town of Wawarsing. I'm also the executive director of the Ellenville Regional Hospital Foundation Board. And I got involved in the trash situation because they were siting a landfill across from my property in Greenfield Park. And that prompted me to learn about trash and become a master recycler and composter through the UCRA. And I've noticed such a difference in my trash since I started composting. And I'm trying to talk my friends into it. They're like, oh no, that's messy. I'm like, no, it's not. It's easy. But, you know, I think we have a long way to go to deal with the waste situation, so that's why I'm here.
I'm Claudia Joseph. I live in Rosendale, and I have a long history of running mid-sized compost systems. I grew up on a horse farm, too, so I'm familiar with waste, but I'm really worried about plastics in our environment, and I think recycling has a bad rap, and that I'm into promotions and sales of the idea of it's not that hard and you can do it. But most people just give up, I notice. So I have one bag of trash a month that I take to the transfer station.
I'm Penny Coleman, and I live in Rosendale, and I'm on the Environmental Commission and the Ulster County Environmental Management Council. And they wanted a representative to this committee, and I had done a lot of work on zero waste at Rosendale's festivals, and I've been in touch with Mark and Angelina, and I said, should I? And they said, yes. So, I, you know, I'll do it.
Vince Mao. I live in Saugerties, about 20 minutes away. And I have a lot of background in environmental technology and sciences, both corporate and private. I also happen to have had a partner who was a mushroom grower many years ago, and I have I actually helped him research new composting methods, which some of which might apply to composting, you know, food items. But we used a lot of horse manure back then, mushroom compost, actually, Claudia. But my experience, I think, that's most pertinent to what we're trying to do right now is I worked for a company called Orpha Corporation about 40-some years ago, and they had they were in the process of building a plant. They actually finished the plant, which automated a recycling process that was developed in Switzerland. And I was in charge of end product research, development, and sales. And the end products were basically clean fiber, like paper fiber, which was baled. And the plastics were all reduced to an aggregate by means of heat and ozonation, and then hammer milled in screens so that you ended up with a very uniform product that could then be used. We just discovered all kinds of uses, everything from pavement to, you know, I don't know, filler for a lot of applications. And so I'm a believer that if we have the will to do it, the only other thing we need is the technology. I mean, and technology is changing a lot right now. And I think it's time to go back and look at some of these material processing techniques that may be available to drastically reduce the waste rate. That's kind of where I'm at.
Great. What town did you say you were from? I'm sorry.
Saugerties.
Oh, sorry.
Mary Jo Green. I am the representative from the legislature, but only until the end of the year. So I'm in the process of talking with Chris Hewitt, who chairs Energy and Environment, and Peter Criswell. I would like to continue, but we have to figure out what that appointment would be. And it is a public meeting, so I can come and participate if recognized. I was the county recycling coordinator for the really first 10 years. There was someone for 3 years before me, but mainly when recycling was getting started. And collectively, we worked together and we took our recycling rate from 4% to documented 40%. In a decade, and we did it by bringing all the stakeholders together, working very closely and collaboratively with the municipalities, with the haulers, with the health department, you know, truly all the stakeholders. Anyway, I agree that the main mission is to look at what we need, might want to recommend to add as a mandatory recyclable, and what things, if they're really not working and there's no way to use technology to fix it, are there things that we want to recommend to stop being mandated? I can't think of an example, but we can discuss that. And I want to say that I think that one of the most low-hanging fruit might be a way to phase in C&D recycling when there really is a facility to process it. One of the reasons I haven't pushed it, but I do think that that might be something that real that yeah. we could. And I would start with, we can talk more about this, but I just want to say I would start with any project that has government funding should have to look at deconstruction if there's a place to take the materials. And I won't go, I could go on about that, but I won't, we're just doing introductions, but I want to sort of get that as an agenda item. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping we can move forward with zero waste, with the zero waste plan. I'm still trying to figure out how that's going to get done. And then also the Reuse Innovation Center. Again, those are not so much about mandatory, but they definitely relate to our mission and also to maximizing waste diversion. Sorry, I took so long.
Manager, you're always a tough act to follow. Jonathan Kaplan, I've been in solid waste for about 20 years. Metro New York, Rockland County, Westchester, and the Hudson Valley. I represent the haulers, that bracket they call the waste haulers, mm-hmm. for what it's worth, for better or for worse. I think I got involved originally because I got tapped by my boss who said, you're going to do this. And I was like, oh, no. You know, what is it, Monday nights, 5 o'clock? Perfect. And I don't know how long I've been involved, but I really enjoy it. I like to hear what, you know, what folks are bringing, you know, what the concerns are, the feedback from the RRA entities. As a waste hauler, you know, we depend, especially in Ulster County, which is a flow control county, we depend on, you know, these people because we're beholden to them. You know, the trash that's collected in Ulster County has to go to an Ulster County facility. So obviously we work very closely with those folks. But as far as, you know, the zero waste goals and things like that, you know, these tremendously ambitious goals and stuff and the recycling efforts, it's, to me, I'm very passionate about it. Always have been. We as a company, you know, when you work in this industry for a number of years, you really get to see, I'll use the word, the paradox of it, and, you know, the fallacies and what does work, you know, what's really working and what really isn't working. You know, there's still apartment buildings out there, no names, but, you know, you've got 75 units and they've got 4 95 gallon toters for their recycling program serviced on a weekly basis. Now, I got a 95 gallon recycling toter at my house, and I can tell you it's full every week. And it's just me and my mother who's suffering from dementia currently, and she doesn't generate as much recycling as I do. So, you know, exponentially speaking, there's all kinds of things that have to be scrutinized and looked at. So, you know, it's important for me to be involved with this group. I enjoy it. I think there's value in it. But I also want to bring a degree of, you know, sober rationality to it, mm-hmm. you know, and realism. You know, because yeah. this is something that, you know, as a culture, we have to adopt, we have to, you know, get involved and get this program going right away and quickly, and that's you know, that's a real challenge. So anything I can do to facilitate that, representing the haulers, I intend to do it.
Okay. We went around and did introductions. Are you Sonali? Okay, great. You want to go ahead and just introduce yourself, tell us what town you're from and what brought you to the committee?
Sure. Sonali, and I think we did this last time too, yes. I'm in Allenville, and I'm a recent transplant from the West Coast, where I was on a climate committee that was appointed by our city council, and I was a nature rights representative. And I'm with an interfaith community here in Allenville, and the dump was proposed for our road, and that's what brought me out of the woods, literally, and then was invited to participate in this, and I think it was to be connected to the county and to continue what's going on, and also to bring in some imagination and playfulness and art and creativity in navigating the soberness of this. And for that, for me, I know as a child, like being taught in school about litter, like that impacted me strongly, and I feel like that's a strong place to be connected with, is the children in the schools, and activate also their creativity and imagination where they're not limited by the boxes that we've built around ourselves, and also educate them and educate up that way the artists in our community and other community members, and really coming up with creative solutions, but also addressing waste in like our relationship to consumption and how we can redefine that, not just mitigate like the creation, like what we do with all the stuff we create, but how we change culturally, socially.
Great. It's nice to meet everyone I haven't met before, and see everyone that I'd worked with on this committee before again today. I had the Lisbeth hyperlinked into the agenda that she emailed some documents that I thought would be helpful for us to ground ourselves in. The first one was Chapter 304 of the Code of the County, which is the county's recycling law, which is the law that establishes the Recycling Oversight Committee's purpose. So no judgment, but was anyone able to read that law ahead of today? You probably were.
Historically, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I'm just kind of want to open it up and see if anyone wanted to share any key takeaways from that law.
I get a lot of feedback from the community. Hey, is recycling a law? Yeah, but we're not the enforcers. As the entity who provides, the vendor who provides the service, we are not, you know, we're not the enforcers of that statute and that law. So, and I'm surprised often, not so much anymore surprised, but I hear it still quite a bit. Is recycling a law? Do I have to recycle? Do I have to have recycling? Which to me is kind of twofold ridiculous, because one, recycling is infinitely cheaper than disposal of solid waste, whatever form it's in, demo or municipal solid waste. And it's also more, in my opinion, and I'm sure in all your opinions, morally and ethically correct and valuable. So when I hear that, I'm like, yeah, it's a law. So, and I just try to give them the soft answer that promotes recycling rather than, yeah, it's a law, I can't believe you're not in compliance. You know,
right.
I have to be very, you know, sensitive to with my response to that particular, so, you know, that, and it's not just Ulster County, it's Dutchess County as well, and, mm-hmm. and surrounding counties where you hear this, and it's, you know, hey, is it really a law? So, and there's still a lot of folks that just don't know, they don't realize that yes, it's a law, but, and once you declare that it's a law, then it becomes, you know, well, did I do something wrong?
Yeah.
Am I, you know, is there a penalty? So.
Right. There's also no enforcement of skip the straw or the other stuff. and that's a law. And I don't think the county is making, is prioritizing enforcement right now. Though I've talked to Jen about it, and I think she would very much like to be able to enforce it somehow. But that is, yeah, it's when people ignore a law that I think you get people slowing down on their commitment.
Yes. I just want to say that part of the problem is that the agency's budget depends a lot on how much garbage they bring in for the
tipping fees.
And so until recently, the enforcement officer has really been focusing on who's not bringing the garbage to Ulster County because they need the money. Mm-hmm. I think that's changing, but I have seen multiple laws passed, including the food waste composting law. And I think the first layer has to be education, and I bring it up until it happens, and I actually have a good idea about how to make it, how to get it to happen. In terms of food waste composting, if we had an expo and we had the haulers there that provide the service, and we featured good examples like SUNY New Paltz, Mohonk Mountain House, Frost Valley, etc., and I've been asking the chamber to sponsor it, because when they sponsored a recycling expo years ago, it really brought the businesses and a lot of people on board. It was very positive, and people enjoyed the meeting, and the vendors were there. The chamber is very busy, and they haven't embraced this idea, but I just went to a wonderful leadership conference up at Mohonk Mountain House, and it was the Mohonk Consultation sponsored it. And Mohonk was one of the first to do food waste composting, and they do it on a very large scale and have for 30 years. And I think it would be a nice way to honor Jerome Smiley and Ben Madison, who were, founders or early Mohonk goes way back. But 20, 30 years ago, they were innovators. And I think people like to go to Mohonk. And I think I'm going to write that up for them. And if we want, we could make it be a request on behalf of
sure.
Anyway, I think what I really want to stress is that getting the education and the buy-in makes it much easier. It's how we took our recycling rate so fast. A decade doesn't seem fast, but the changes that took place over that decade were significant, and I think we can apply that experience, new technologies, and everyone's input to make really good recommendations to address the enforcement issue that came out of flow control and the fact that the agency has not had to come to the legislature for a net service fee since they regained flow control. Enough said. I'm sorry.
Do you know what the recycling rate is now? I mean, when was it 40%?
It was 40% in 2000. We went from 1990 to 2000, yeah, roughly. And we, some of you may know Emily Hauser worked for the agency at that time, and Laura Petit, and we put together very rigorous reports. It was self-reporting, but we got reports from the haulers and any business that had 25 or more employees.
Yeah, but that was then. Now. A number for now.
So one of the takeaways that I kind of have is there is a recycling compliance officer who is supposed to report to us quarterly. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I've been thinking about is what data do we want? What data do we want to see? Mm-hmm. And that kind of like what's the volumes? You know, what's the compliance reporting? I think those would be useful for us. Then the other thing, I guess I'm also curious when we talk about what's the percentage of recycling, are we talking about what's being recycled versus what's being thrown away? Or are we talking about waste audits that show us, are there recyclables in the waste stream that should be, you know, what's being missed? You know, that's also where my brain goes, is there any measurement of, like, what's being missed? But that's kind of, I'm thinking about data that we could get. That's, you know, we're supposed to be getting some kind of report. Yes?
And also what's going into recycling that is not recyclable
or right.
contaminated. I think that's important.
I agree.
And also, I would like to follow that too and know what percentage of our recyclables are actually being recycled. Like beyond just us and our county, like where does that go and what happens to it? Because my understanding is about 30% of what goes into recyclables actually makes it into another product.
Jonathan's the guy that can tell us.
Well, some degree, and again, every repository is going to be different. Some are far more efficient. Some have vastly updated equipment. I can tell you that that's not the case for Ulster County. But as you move into metropolitan markets, where budgets are bottomless and unlimited, the game changes dramatically. They have access to all kinds of technologies and things like that. So you'll see a variance there, you know. I don't have the data. I'm not an expert, but I can tell you, having been in the industry, that there is a volume of recyclable material, reclaimable material, that is ending up in the waste stream. And on the inverse, like you say, there's it's called residue, if you will, that's ending up in, that's non-recyclable material that's ending up in the recycle stream, mm-hmm. which complicates that. You know, we get penalties as a hauler if we bring a load in. Most loads are screened. And if there's an inordinate or excessive volume of residue in a recycle load, you'll get a penalty. And that could be, the entire load could be considered a contaminated load. You pay we'll pay the refuse rate as opposed to the recycle rate. So, and that can be pretty dramatic. I mean, for instance, I get an email every month, you know, because the markets are flexible and they're always in flux based on demand and who's paying for what. You know, traditionally, cardboard had some value. Yeah. Everything else you pay for. To, mm-hmm. You know, I remember in my career, cardboard used to be worth as much as $75, $80 a ton. $6.22 a ton today.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So, yeah.
Why
yeah.
is that?
Because nobody wants it. Nobody's paying for it. The Chinese aren't buying it. They were big buyers for decades. And when they erected their green fence 10 years ago, that all changed. So we had to find, you know, the repositories had to find domestic markets, mm-hmm. other national and international markets for that product. And it was severely devalued. So
is there a shortage of processing facilities?
I think that's always going to be an issue and a concern. I mean, you're beholden to go to the facility that's nearest to you. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to bypass a facility that's 20 miles away for one that's 60 miles away. Same concept with landfills, you know. Mm-hmm. So is there a shortage of facilities? I don't think so, but there's a shortage of value in the commodity.
There would be a shortage of facilities because we were sending our recycling to China.
Well, it was, first it's going to a repository. We, you know, as a hauler, we're not going to get involved with brokering recycling. We're taking it to a repository that accepts it. We either pay to, you know, single stream uh-huh. requires sorting, so therefore there's a cost associated with that. So this is your cost. This is what it costs you. There was a time when you'd bring material to a repository and you'd get a rebate. And early on in recycling, that rebate was oftentimes enough to cover the cost of the service. So we could do recycling for little or no cost, which was great. And that changed, fairly quickly.
Yeah, I know the UCRA said they're paying, I can't remember what it is, but it was, I think I remember they said it was 80 cents a ton that they're paying,
right,
to recycle glass.
Yeah. Well, and glass is just, it's just sand, so it's really valueless. So that's, that's just a commodity that just doesn't have any value, really.
That's interesting. Because
unless it's a bottle that can be reused.
Yeah.
Unless it's magic or a beer bottle.
Yeah.
I use the beer analogy because I love beer.
Well, I talked to some vintners maybe a year and a half ago who said that they were having to consider alternative packaging because glass was becoming obsolete. Like
right.
They were having a hard
right.
time.
Right, because they can't reclaim their bottles, a lot of places look to reclaim their bottles. If they can,
But it might be sand, but it is also
right.
A valuable commodity.
I think the cost, the value, is in the manufacturing process, and that's where, to make the bottle. I know some bottles are so fancy; they have little animals on them, and I'm like, my God, it looks like that was an expensive bottle to make.
Yeah, and I think this. I do think one thing that this made me think that might be helpful for us, not today, but if we were to at least have a documented understanding as a committee of what the process is, because it's not it's not in isolation. Like, everything about the recycling market is connected. So while I do not think that we should be considered with end products or, national policy, I think it's helpful for us to know is part of the reason that there's a challenge because there's no manufacturer or I was shopping for copy paper for the town and I was like, I want to buy recycled copy paper. It costs twice as much mm-hmm. to source recycled copy paper than new.
Why? Do you know?
I don't know. I wanted to research it because I was is it because there's not enough? Is the process more expensive? Is there not enough product? It made me think, this is
there aren't a lot of recycled paper mills, is one problem. The other problem is de-inking is an expensive process that has a lot of negative environmental outcomes. And so, to control the process and make it comply, you have very few of them to begin with. And they're paying a higher price to produce the paper, But it's amazing the people are still buying it. I mean, it just shows you that there is a sincere interest.
Right.
They'll pay the extra cost because it's vital to them and important to them.
I mean, there are two things that come to mind. It would be amazing to have somebody who understands numbers to be able to work up something about true economics.
Yeah.
Like, we might have this understanding, as a society of what this costs, but the greater economic impact on the collective is lost, right? It's hard to understand. That's one thing. And then the other thing is, it would be good maybe for us to review other models. I know in Germany, they do an excellent job when I was there of the consumer sorts and washes each thing, and the glass is separate, the plastic is separate, the paper is separate. Just look at models and how they're working in other places.
One of the limitations now is, I think there's only three types of plastic that are recycled at all, right? PET, polyethylene maybe? And there's a third.
I know at the UCRA that they have three. I know they have three plastic products that they sell.
So most of the MRFs are only really pulling out, three out of probably 20 or 30 different kinds of plastic that are out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I toured the UCRA, it's full of what Angelina called wish cycling, stuff that's not really recyclable.
Right.
That happens.
Yeah. I think source separation is absolutely key. When we were setting up the program, and I'm going to specifically ask what the current rate is. I think I remember 28%. It certainly has not gone up in
20 years,
25 years.
Yeah.
But
we actually, the original MRFs had for glass, about half the container was for clear, and then green, and then a fraction for amber. And it was sorted and clean, and we were able to market it, and it was made into new bottles. But now, and we did not try to recycle window pane, or that would be in the CND stream. So I do think that, you know, it's possible at drop-off centers, at curbside, then it has to get processed at a sorting facility, and sorting glass by color might not be feasible. But it seems to me that they were when we went to the place in Beacon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway,
still very labor intensive, though.
Yeah, but it is. It's in my experience, it was how to make sure the materials are marketable,
mm-hmm.
and
right.
And we had, you know, every building in the county, every county building, knew where to put their office paper, where to put their newspaper, where to put their cardboard, and I believe that the last contract for the county buildings was for commingled and single stream, and it was not. I just want to stress the importance in terms of marketing of single stream, and then also the importance of the education of what actually can get recycled versus what could get set aside and put into a, I forget, there's a name for a cell, a lined cell for example, plastics that are not currently recyclable, but could be. So rather than just put it right in the landfill, there are places.
Coming off of what Sonali was saying, I'd be interested in knowing whether or not UCRA has been doing their due diligence in searching out alternative markets, or whether or not they are...
They just use a broker is the answer. They're not... There were times when there was somebody at the agency that was responsible for marketing and did that research. I don't remember who it was, but they're using a broker, and I think most facilities are. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the most materials are going to get recycled. What the broker is looking to do is get the best dollar.
Yeah.
But if we could keep the bottles from breaking, you know, and I don't know that we can. But if we could find a way to ask people to be more careful with their recycling, then maybe they would. And maybe we could get better dollar for it. But I don't know. You know, the trees really interested me. why is recycled paper so much more expensive?
Yeah.
And is the process of making the paper from trees equally toxic? It's certainly smelly.
Jonathan, do you guys do your own recycling? It doesn't go through the UCRA.
No, it doesn't. Recycling doesn't fall under, from what I understand, the flow control loss places.
Yeah.
So commercial and residential customers that we manage in Ulster County are still, they still have the luxury of single stream.
Right.
Which a lot of people like. You know, they just throw it all in one bin, not the garbage bin, the recycle bin, and we'll manage it. and you know, we broker with a repository that manages that still currently, and it's costly. You know, and I say this all the time. You'll hear me say this all the time. This is what I've reduced it to. Managers heard me say this: zero waste does not mean zero cost, and that applies sort of. I hate to be a cliche, but you know, there's always costs associated with these things. You know, from not just from the hauling perspective, but from the repositories, around the recycling, trash, demo, whatever it is. There's, you know, there's labor involved, and then there's also identifying the markets and getting it. You know, whether it's a load of demo going to landfill or a load of recycling going to its final dispensation, there's always that cost associated with it. So we use ReCommunity, which is a, you know, which is really Republic, which
That's
is a
big.
Yeah. Yeah. So Republic is a big company, a big national company that does a terrific job of managing, you know, waste and recycling, and their operation is pretty well, you know, pretty responsible, pretty well run down there.
But and, it's really automated.
It is,
in
but
ways
not
even.
It could be even more automated. I mean, some of these modern MRFs, if you visit some of these modern MRFs, are
They're putting AI
amazing.
On picking arms now.
Yeah, yeah. It's all automated. There's electric eyes, there's bursts of air.
What counties do you deal with?
Currently, it's Dutchess, it's Ulster, it's Orange, it's portions of Putnam, it's Columbia, it's.
And they're all different, right?
Yeah, we do a little Connecticut work.
Not Sullivan. You don't deal with
We do a little in Sullivan, too. Yeah.
Sullivan's very different from
Ulster.
Yeah,
we do a little bit over there.
So, one thing I wanted to highlight is our charges in the recycling law, where certain recyclables are mandated. And we talk a lot about UCRA, but the law applies to haulers also. So even though the material does not have to go through the UCRA, there is a roundabout sort of enforcement mechanism, which is tied to, I guess, the license issued by the Department of Health. So if you're not complying with the article, they have the ability to not issue the license to haul in Ulster County. So I don't know how the enforcement is supposed to go through the agency. I don't know how that works in practice.
Can I address that? The agency has an enforcement officer, and what we did in the past is they worked very closely with the Department of Health, which goes in and licenses the haulers and goes into all the food processing facilities. And so there was a good working relationship, and it wasn't about pushing enforcement, it was about education. But if a business just completely ignored information from the county and from rather the agency and the Department of Health, then they were notified that, you know, if you don't start recycling, we are going to do enforcement. And it only took a few cases of enforcement for people to know that the agency was serious. There is an enforcement officer. And rather than put it into a legal system, it goes to an independent hearing officer. And one had been appointed, and I'm still trying to, I'll check with Peter Criswell to see if there is someone currently that if charges had to be filed, that there would be a place to bring it and fines can be applied and so forth. It doesn't go into the judicial system.
Are you talking about the independent administrative hearing officer?
That's
created in the law. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have a backup question. When you were asked if you do the recycling, what does that mean? Like whether it's converted into reusable products there?
Well, we're just a hauler. We're just a hauling company.
The question I was asking is, do they handle their own recyclables? So municipalities who have transfer stations, we have contracts with the UCRA. And our all the mandated recyclables go to the UCRA for processing for the municipal facilities. But haulers, recycling is mandated. Certain recyclables are mandated, but they're not part of the flow control. So those products do not have to flow through UCRA, but they still have to be recycled. So I was just bringing that up. One of my goals is that we all become experts in this law, and we know how the system works, because I think that'll just support our work further. So I was just asking, I was just thinking about that and kind of understanding it sort of for the first time, and was curious about how that worked and whether, you know, whether it feels like there's an enforcement arm over that. And you answered my question, but then the hauler is bringing the product to all of these places that
right.
Jonathan was talking about, and then they're selling it on the market, and then that's being manufactured.
They may take your plastics and shred them, and then they are going to, in many cases, bundle them, you know, and band them, put them in a baler, however they're going to...
And bury them?
No,
bail them.
I know, but then...
No, they're going to sell them. They're gonna get them to market, and they're gonna get loaded onto freight vehicles and transported to whoever's buying it. And a lot of times those are their markets in, you know, not just domestic markets but international markets. You know, a lot of stuff goes to India. A lot of stuff, you know, whereas traditionally it would go to China. There's new Asian markets, East Asian markets. There's now national markets. So some people are buying it nationally.
Why?
So that's where it's, you know.
For what?
Not necessarily for, you know, a plastic bottle isn't necessarily going to be reincarnated into a plastic bottle.
No,
it's other plastic products, fiber.
Recycled plastic, yeah. Lumber.
I saw that
or
pile.
Yeah, they call it fiber.
Shredded plastic,
yeah.
And then it was baled.
It's fiber. And they use it in all kinds of industrial, the list of industrial uses is
okay.
Limitless.
Okay.
You know, and it could be clothing, textiles, it could be construction materials, you know.
Uh-huh.
Glass, for a long time, glass was being added to asphalt because it's really just sand and aggregate. Yep, concrete. So
for a long time, meaning it's not done anymore?
No, it is. Depends on what the markets are doing,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. The volumes, the availabilities. Mm-hmm. That's why these, you know, we're not really the broker for the recycling. Mm-hmm. As the hauler, we're just moving it. You know, we're transferring it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jonathan, and you don't want it stockpiling.
Do you get any guidance from the state or the county at all as far as what's marketable, mm-hmm. or where you can go to find
it? Not too much. And now that we're actually, you know, we have been... Royal Carding has been purchased by Casella, which is a larger company, and Casella is known as one of the most prolific and vital recyclers in America right now. They really care about it,
yeah.
And I've seen it myself. You know, the he's stepping down now. He's sort of transitioning to a chairman role from the founder and the chief executive role, but John Casella himself, who's a wonderful guy, his daughter Liza is head of organic sales and recycling, and she has some wonderful industrial contacts. So, for instance, I had a customer in Dutchess who makes sake, and they're the number one sake in the world. They're from Japan. There's only one individual on the entire site that even speaks English, and one of their byproducts is this. There's two byproducts. One is sort of a glutinous rice-like material, you know, that they get after their boil, and that's easy to handle and process. And you know, well, you know, we want to recycle it. We want it to go to the organic stream, which we did. We found a great home for that, so which is great. That's a win-win. Then they came up with this new product that was the consistency of powder. And if you know anything about landfills, they don't like powder. So it was what they call a difficult to manage byproduct. Landfill, you know, first we tried to send it to the, we tried to recycle it through the organics. They didn't want it. No, we can't have this. It's way too much of a nuisance. We open a bag of this and it goes, next thing you know, you have a football field plume of powder and dust. It's a nuisance. We can't have it. All right, well, what are our options? So we didn't want to, but we sent it to the landfill. we didn't have an option. We got to move this stuff because we had rooms full of this. We had warehouse of this stuff. The landfill didn't want it. They rejected it right away. Oh boy, we're in trouble now. Well, guess what? Here comes Casella. Animal feed. So Casella had partnered with this great feed company in New England called Bright Feeds, and they're like, "How much of it do you have? How much can we get? We want it. We want all you have." Mm-hmm. And so it's been a great, it's a win squared, mm-hmm. For recycling. So it really is a connectedness that you really, and Casella's brought that, to us. Without them, we wouldn't have been able to partner that way.
Jonathan, were you talking about plastic powder?
No, it's like rice.
Rice.
I'm sorry.
It's a rice byproduct.
I really lost that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a byproduct. It's an organic.
Okay, but it's rice.
You know what it really is? It's like sugar.
Yeah.
And that's why it's valuable in animal feed. Oh. It's a sweetener. It's sugar. It's got some nutritive value left in it. Mm-hmm. And it's an additive to the feed, to whatever products they're making.
Thank
to
you.
Them, it's as good as gold.
That makes sense.
And if they didn't have it, and if we weren't making that connection and getting it to the recycle, they'd have to buy it, mm-hmm. and it's expensive.
So what I'm hearing is doing a waste audit to see what's going into our waste stream that we can be creative in our diversion.
They did that. I forget, one of the colleges on Long Island came up and did that, and that report is available. We should keep a list of things that we want to ask the audit.
What's the name of
the report? So
that's
I'm
great to get.
It was a waste audit of whatever comes into the RRA. It was really to teach the students.
Right.
But it was done.
Was that a recent report in the last few years?
I'm going to say a couple years.
Yeah, that's so still contemporary.
Have they implemented anything from the report that you know of?
This is the question that we want. And really, Erica and Mark should be here. Mm-hmm. They'll have some of the answers. I think it might have just been an oversight on Liz's part.
They asked to be here when we were at the last meeting.
They what?
They asked to be invited to this meeting.
Yeah, and that went to Michael, and then Liz did the inviting.
So when I put the agenda together, mm-hmm. they had said that Mark would come to our next meeting.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is by this discussion, I've been making notes of what I think the types of information or data that we would find helpful, and then I want to coordinate with Mark about what's possible, and then we can kind of set some goals. But I like the idea of quarterly reporting. So what I have so far is that we are interested in the volumes and percentages and different breakdowns of that. So overall, waste that's coming through versus what the rate of recycling is, and then what the audit reports are. And what I'll say about that too is, we can make recommendations. So I think as a committee, we won't be the ones leading a charge for waste audits. But I think that's another thing, an education that, whenever the agency is interested in that, specifically municipalities should be doing waste audits. So something like that would be, if it was something that we could encourage, that's some data that we could encourage there be like a more active collection on.
Aaron, we had asked Mark about that at the UCRA meeting that we were at, and he said that there was a waste characterization from a few years ago, but he thought it was time to do another one.
So, oh, great.
So maybe we can just put our hat on the ring and say,
if and when
we'd like to make sure we get a copy.
Great.
And also textile waste in this county, I think, is only 15% successful. A lot of stuff's being thrown away.
Yeah. So with that, I'm curious if we have a budget or if we can talk to Mark. There are some companies that I know one of my neighbors has a bag that she gets that she pays for separately where she puts in all her textiles.
Retold recycling.
What's it called?
Retold.
Okay, retold. I think it's called Thread, something about Thread.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there's another B Corp called Ridwell, and they'll take, like, single-use plastic bags, bottle caps, things like that, twist-sized rubber bands, things that we cannot put in recycling. And that's something that now, I think there's over 100,000 individual households that pay for that service. But I'm curious about partnering with them for the municipality.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things. One of the things I really want us to root ourselves in is the, like, thinking about working towards mandated recyclables. So I think this type of energy and conversation is useful, but I think it has to be supported by data, right? Because if we're thinking about mandating something, it has to be scalable to the entire county. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing I would say is, because what the recycling law, and this was like the other thing I wanted to bring up, recycling law only applies to mandated recyclables, which is cardboard, paper, whatever goes into commingle.
It's aluminum.
Yeah, the aluminum, glass, and then the aluminum and plastic go in the same bin, plastic, cardboard, and glass,
and
right?
Metal.
Yeah. But that's it, right? There's nothing else that's been added, right? Compost isn't mandated right now.
Yes, it is.
It is mandated?
Or no? I wrote that
book. But is it on the mandated? Is
Thank
it something
you for
that we
reminding us.
Are we overseeing that? I guess that's my question.
It should be the agency. That's what it says in the law, and that's we've had a bit of a pattern with the ability to refuse a straw, to bring your own bag, and the composting law is that they get passed, and then because of the flow control issue, they haven't been enforced. But again, I don't think enforcement's the first step. Mm-hmm. I think that's the last step. We need to do the education, and but definitely, it's anyone who generates more than, at this point, a half a ton a week. It started out, it was phased in so that it wasn't a shock, and there were enough haulers and composters to accept the material. That's not yet true with C&D, but it was true with food waste. And so it's now only half a ton. It was phased in from 2 tons a week down to 1 ton a week of food waste that they generate. They either have to compost it on site, which there are good examples, or send it to a composting facility.
Yeah.
And some of those composting facilities also collect, and others we use haulers. But it is absolutely the law.
But so not for individuals, just for
businesses.
It's for large generators.
Yep.
Large
generators. Yes, so for half a ton a week.
Food Waste Reduction and Recovery Act.
Okay. So to your point, Mana Jo, I think in addition to just the numbers, I think in a quarterly report we might want to hear about, because the education should come from the agency, right? They should be the ones, because they're tasked with coordination of efforts to educate the public and private sector as to standing recycling source separation laws and regulations. So I think that might be another thing we could ask for, is what's your education strategy?
But let's also encourage them to work with the Department of Health, because I think mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons we were as effective. Because the Department of Health is working, as I said, with the haulers and with the food waste generators. And, mm-hmm. you know, to me, if you isolate it to the agency has a lot to do. But if they're working in partnership
with Department of Health. And when Dr. Smith headed up Department of Health, she cared about this, and she, and it, the holders were treated fairly. But everyone knew what was going on and who was recycling and who wasn't, and because people were working together.
Mm-hmm. Anna, the implication there is that it's no longer the case since Smith left?
I don't think it is. Mm-hmm. And I've brought it up, and, you know, people nod, but I don't think it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
At least I think it could be more proactive.
Okay.
Also, Sonali and I were in a meeting that Mark Ryder did in Warsing, and we brought up, like, do you have a marketing budget? Can you do some billboards on how to recycle? People don't, I have friends my age that just don't compost because they're like, it's too messy, you know. Just some billboards that are like, you know, put your compost bin in your freezer if you don't want it on your counter. Or, you know, basic stuff that makes it work for your lifestyle. There needs to be, and I think Angelina does a great job for what she has to work with, but, you know, it just seems like there should be more public awareness that's not kind of happening.
Right, and I think this is, you know, I'm kind of getting around to the, you know, the agency should be reporting to us about compliance. Like, we should get a quarterly report about that. Whether that,
yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to sort of raise is, like, whatever that looks like, our recommendations for how to get those numbers up would be, hey, you need to look at your education, coordinating with other, you know, that, I guess that's where I'm curious to see what the numbers are and see, because I don't remember ever getting a report any time that I've been on this committee. So I think starting there is like a really good place. And then we can see.
Well, doesn't he do a report now for the group that
used,
well,
it's UCR.
The board.
Their board?
The board, yeah.
I'm sure they have the data.
So they share it
with them. Yeah, I'll coordinate with Mark, but I'm sure they have numbers to share with us.
I can look it up on the website, but I'm still not clear who UCCRA is, if they're like a government entity, a private entity.
Oh.
And like what their role, because there's the haulers, but like what is their mandate?
They're a public authority that was created in 1988,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And by state law, and they're meant to be autonomous,
mm-hmm.
and run by a board of directors, or they're run by the staff, but the staff answers to and takes direction from a board of directors who are appointed by the legislature.
Okay.
And right now they're advertising to fill vacancies, and the chairman of the legislature will ask the Energy and Environment Committee to do interviews and make a recommendation to fill those vacancies. And the only connection to the legislature, the main connection, other than the legislature has to approve the local solid waste management plan, which has to be revised every 10 years and checked every 2 years. And the legislature is the sort of safety net. If the agency can't balance its budget with tipping fees and revenues from recyclables and any other revenue they have, they can come to the legislature for what's called a net service fee to make up the difference.
So the way I describe it to people is it's like the bridge authority or the port authority. It's an authority. It's only in this county. It's not in Sullivan. It's not in other counties. They all handle it differently. Mm-hmm. This was started in 1988, mm-hmm. because there were 20 towns in the county of Ulster with landfills that were all leaching into the ground.
Yeah.
And so they all changed to transfer stations. and they started transferring all the trash to Seneca Lakes because they have to, they still have to remediate all that leachate, right? All the water, though, all those landfills leached into the ground.
So the second link we were sent in the email explains
it
a
does.
Lot about
okay,
our
thank
product.
You. I didn't see that. Okay, yeah. So, but just for a little summary, they were charged with remediating the leaching from the landfills and
no. So basically the law in 1988 established flow control. So all the did it not?
Flow control was later.
Oh, flow control was later.
Was
well,
later, correct?
Was it?
Flow control didn't happen
flow
that early,
was
right?
Later.
Flow control was like 90s. It was later.
I know.
They originally had flow control
and then
the Carbone decision said that it violated interstate commerce and the flow control went away and people could take their garbage anywhere they wanted. And then there was more recently...
they put it back in because the UCRA was losing a ton of money and was not solving.
Yeah, so basically it's like the authority that's the hub for all the waste. So the what is mandated to go is flow control is all municipal solid waste has to go through the UCRA in our county.
Go through them in what way?
It all goes there, and then it gets transferred.
Okay, got it.
And the reason that recyclables are not required under flow control to go to the agency is that some of the municipalities are doing fine with, for example, scrap metal. They sell the scrap metal to a scrap metal dealer, and they get paid for it. They didn't want to lose that revenue. And so as the negotiations were going on, rather than flow control be for everything, it was for the waste that was not recyclable, and the haulers and the town transfer stations and the city can market their own recyclables.
Okay.
And so that was another point that I meant to make when after you mentioned the textiles, is that something that's really powerful in towns and I think can build momentum is the municipalities can have their own programs. So like in our town, we do scrap metal. We have a free exchange, which is a reuse program that's run by volunteers. We have someone that runs a free clothing exchange one Sunday a month. So like, and then we have textile recycling, and our staff wants to have a repair, they want to host repair cafes. So next year we're planning on expanding, and that can be a powerful thing. And it can also be something that's networked, especially among, like if you're ECC, Climate Smart, like there's can be a lot of networking in that way. So I just wanted to raise that there's like a Venn diagram of these issues. And while I think it's really important for us to root ourselves in what we think could be mandated, I also wanted to mention that there's still the opportunity to see, like, encourage programming, like, even on a smaller scale. Yeah. And I think the UCRA is investigating a lot of these things that right now, I don't know the status of their compost grant program that they, but there are things that they have been investigating. And I'm sure Mark either has shared those things with you guys at a meeting that I wasn't at, or can share more about that.
He did a little,
yeah.
But I wasn't clear on how far they were along with their plans, even though he was pretty clear on what the plans were.
He said end of 2026.
Last I want to have the take it or leave it sheds in every transfer station. And we've done two repair cafes in Ellenville.
Oh, cool.
And they've worked out really well. Great. It's a very well-organized group.
Yeah.
Yeah,
one staff,
too, has had a few. And they've been very, very well attended.
I mean, I'm hearing the potential for jobs in local townships, right, that can deal with recyclables. Like whether it's waste metal or compost or these things, and that's nice. And then the second thing I'm wondering is, in the past, when you've been on the meetings or in this committee, have you gotten a clear budget of how UCCRA is spending their resources?
Their budget is public.
Yeah.
So
they present it every week.
Yep.
Every month. at the board meeting.
Everybody's going through a budget cycle right now because that has to also come to the legislatures.
And that can just be found on their website? Yeah.
On their website,
yeah. Okay, so we are at about 6:09, so I just wanted to synthesize a little bit. I mentioned this before, but I do think it's really, I think it would be really useful for all of us to really get to know our charge, the law, and that. So that information is provided in these links, and I will try to download that as a PDF and attach it for anyone that wasn't able to open that. Yeah. Then I will coordinate with Mark about the recycling compliance officer quarterly report, what we think could be in there, what they think is possible for maybe the first report. I think also the mandated, I mean, I think we all know what the mandated list is. I think my only question is, with the food waste reduction law, did compost become a mandated recyclable, or is it separate? So that's a question I have.
Wait, if it's mandated, it wasn't added to the law, if that's what you mean.
Yeah.
A separate law was
right.
created.
Okay. So yeah, I didn't know if it was mandated under the recycling law, and therefore something that we would want to see a report on or not. So I can get in.
There is a question that Mark has raised relating to that, and that is that those of us, and it was a very, I don't know what the right word is, but diverse group that worked on it, and included people from DEC who created a statewide law, which is a little different than ours. Ours is anyone with the numbers I mentioned. Theirs excludes schools and hospitals and healthcare facilities. But anyway, it is a separate law, and it really needs to be implemented. Mm-hmm. I was going to make another point, and I lost it. Sorry.
So part, what we talked about is quarterly report with numbers, but then also hearing about education strategies. And then we had some other ideas, and I think in terms of what we're thinking is, like, how do we get ourselves into a position where we can start working on, like, are there other mandated recyclables that we can, like, that we could focus on working with the agency on seeing how we could get something, to that point, right? So I think that's kind of where my mind is thinking on that. And then I think there's a lot, like, there was a lot that was included in the agenda that's hyperlinked, but also I think especially when we're starting to think about, can we get ourselves into position with certain things that we could start recommending? What does that process look like? And to be able to start recommending something that gets mandated, looking at other models, like was brought up, I think that's a really useful thing. That's all I was going to say. Go ahead.
I'm interested in grounding this in, a doable budget, that I wonder what is the most valuable to reclaim in terms of, it seems like it's a shifting landscape with what can be resold that's collected.
Right.
But if we had some idea of that, then I would think we'd want to target the educational push towards the things that actually we can afford to do.
Mm-hmm. So I guess construction waste is a category that we're going to have to pay attention to at some point.
And I have to say, I fully agree. I think that is a place.
Oh,
I do.
We when you make mushroom compost, because you use, well, traditional, not any, it used to use a lot of manure, and manure is kind of greasy, so we would actually add back gypsum and even old recovered drywall mm-hmm. from construction debris, because it's gypsum, basically, and the paper to compost well anyway. So it's interesting to me that as we're approaching this stuff, that there's opportunities. If you have a way of pulling just the sheetrock, you know, but then you got to sort of throw it in a tub grinder, grind it up, get the metal out of it with a magnet. Mm-hmm. But then that's a compostable product. Mm. And the fact is, you know, when you're talking about either recyclables or composting, as I'm seeing right now, you're offsetting a fairly high tipping fee these days. Just taking right. it out of the waste stream, you've got what's the number now per ton?
Disposal number?
Yeah.
130?
It's about to go up again.
It's about to go to 130. It's staying the same for 10.
It's kind of like you're getting paid $130 to do something else with that ton of material, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, but from the county's perspective.
Transportation as well. Seneca Meadows, and that transportation is mostly polluting transportation.
Yeah, sure. 250 miles.
I also think C&D has an opportunity potentially. I don't know a ton about it, but yeah, I think there's an opportunity for there to be that it's a sellable product. I think that's the other reason why it's exciting potentially. I mean, I know it's complicated because of there are materials that you don't want to reuse. So
right, like I had drywall in my garage, and my carpenter said, no, don't try and do anything with it. It's old. It might have asbestos in it. And that you'd have to be careful of the materials. And I would think the thing to skim off the top that would be lucrative would be salvage, like mantelpieces and, you know, banisters and beautiful old wood that we don't want to throw away. I just redid a room, and I salvaged the whole... I'm sorry, guys. I salvaged all the wood I could out of my 100-year-old porch. Uh-huh. And I kept some really nice stuff, but boy, did it take a long time to get the nails down and stack it up, you know.
Yeah. They are doing amazing work. Penny and I, maybe others, were at the circular economy presentation. Yeah. They're working with Sustainable Hudson Valley, and they're going to create a series of focused conversations on how to maximize waste diversion, and this will inform their Reuse Innovation Center, which is now being called Repower. Mm-hmm. And I think they're...
I understand
there's a good model up in the Finger Lakes. A friend of mine told me about it construction reuse.
For construction waste?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Power, I think, is the name of it. And
so they're actively working on that, and they're holding these series of meetings to gather information. I also want to mention that there was a reform committee, an upper reform committee, and they came out with a report, so that also should be available to us. And one of their recommendations, it doesn't affect this committee so much, is to expand the board of the RRA to 15 people instead of 5. I just, for your list, mm-hmm. you mentioned about the percent recycling,
mm-hmm.
and I think we also wanted an update on the audit.
Yes, yep.
You have that.
I have that, yep.
And the one thing I just want to throw out there is that one of the reasons in terms of education that we were so effective is that we met monthly with all of the town recycling coordinators, somebody from each of the 19 transfer stations or mm-hmm. MRDS or whatever, came to a monthly meeting. So if someone went to a conference, we all knew about what they learned at that conference. And I think that might be, it's sort of not a mandatory recycling recommendation, but it might be a recommendation in terms of
then the town recycling coordinator becomes an extension of the agency's education program. Mm-hmm. And that
for each
be
town, for each of the 20
several
towns.
People.
The transfer station employees?
Yeah.
They do have meetings, okay. But I have staff from our town that go, and they said that they aren't super well attended, but they do have, I think they're like, they might be quarterly, where they invite a rep from every town transfer station, and it's basically recycling. The topic is recycling strategies, but I think we can lean, I think it's great for there to be more networking among the towns, and I know the agency does, so maybe that's something we can ask, and if we're having a discussion, we have some ideas to offer them to make that more vibrant, like that would be useful. So our next meeting, I think the bulk of the meeting, we want to have this discussion with the agency where we're hopefully get a report and talk through, and I think it sounds like we have questions. I know you've all met Mark and everything, but it sounds like we have some pointed questions. So that, I think, would be the bulk of the meeting, and then I can also make an agenda item for any follow-up from, if anyone has any follow-up from reading the law or the local, I did not make it through the waste management plan myself before today, but we can do that. So in terms of meeting schedule, we are required to meet quarterly.
I think so, yeah. So
I have to say, in my experience, it's been very hard to meet monthly with this committee. Mm-hmm. In my experience, I've been on it for a few years. We've never done that. And the times we've tried, there won't be a quorum. So I think it's good for us to think about either starting with scheduling quarterly and then increasing number of meetings if we want, or every other month. But I think it's better to not plan on monthly, personally.
I agree with that.
Well, can we just decide before the end of each meeting? Because next month will be our third monthly meeting that we've had since we all got together, right?
Yeah, but that would be December. Do we want to meet in before the holidays, or do we want to push to January?
I think we should push it at least to January.
January.
Is there another UCRA meeting?
Well, there's one tomorrow night, yeah.
Oh, it's tomorrow night.
Yeah. Manajo and I are going, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then also, I guess I wanted to see, so now we've changed, we don't have another meeting scheduled, right? So I want to schedule that. I think I wanted to maybe get some poll you guys for what your availability is, but then I also want to coordinate with Mark because I don't know what his availability is.
Well, and Steve Nobles too, I don't know if he...
Yes, I know, and I want him to be here, yeah. But... This is a great turnout, by the way.
Are we talking about Wednesdays?
Wednesdays are great for me personally because I don't have a board meeting on Wednesdays.
I can't do the 21st in January, but I could do the 14th or the 7th.
I can't do the 3rd one.
Yeah, Wednesdays are generally good for me. I can do any of those.
It's a town meeting day. I'm going to go there next. So if it's at 5, I could do it.
So, which two could you not do? I'm sorry.
Just one I cannot do is the 21st.
Okay, can't do the 21st.
December?
We're looking at January.
January.
So, I'm good with the 14th or the 28th.
We can do the
28th. That first week of January, I have like 3 board meetings, so I would like to not meet on the 7th, but... 14th or 28th works for everyone, and I can see if either works for Mark.
Yeah.
28th is hard.
Oh, okay.
28th is actually impossible. That's when the EMC meets.
Oh, okay.
What about the 21st? Is that a possibility?
I can't do the 21st.
She can't do the 21st. So, sorry, the 28th is the EMC meeting? Okay. Yeah.
So it looks like the 14th.
The 14th. Yeah. Is there any other day of the week in case Mark can't do... I don't know what his availability is, but... I'm typically... Like, could make Mondays or Tuesdays work.
Mondays are good. I never have anything on Mondays.
Absolutely. Absolutely out.
So I'll see if this works for Mark at 5 p.m. And if it doesn't, I'll do a poll.
Okay.
And then I'll schedule it.
That's
okay?
Great.
I was double booked tonight. I chose to come here.
Oh, great. Thank you.
So, you know.
Feels so special.
Made a great sacrifice.
So we currently have two committee vacancies, and it's not necessarily our job to find those people, but since you guys are all connected in your towns, the one that I think you might be able to network about would be the municipal recycling coordinator role. So we're supposed to have a member who is a municipal recycling coordinator, which typically is someone who works at the transfer station. I put it out to the town supervisor association email, and I only heard back from one supervisor. So if you know if your town has a municipal recycling coordinator and we could gauge interest, they do have to get appointed by the legislature. So it's not like you can just tell someone and then they're automatically on the committee. They, you know, they have to go through the process that we all did.
Can they be paid?
Can they be paid?
Through the town, you mean?
Yeah.
I think if they're going
hours.
That I don't think we could pay them, but yeah. Like if someone at my transfer station was attending as our, I would have them get their hourly rate for, I don't know if what I'm saying is making sense.
Yeah, but. Just
that was always the case that the town.
The town would be paying them to be here as the in their role as the municipal recycling coordinator.
Okay,
I would suggest checking with Rich Parity.
I did. Yeah, I'll see if he's gotten back to me. But
Marbletown,
Don LaFera.
They have a recycling coordinator.
Yeah.
In title.
Yeah. And.
I've heard the person in all of it's good, but I don't have a name.
Okay.
Connor's great.
I can reach out also to the supervisors in those towns individually. They might not pay attention to the in Olive. And then
I'm
going
to check with Peter Criswell to see if I could continue to serve as a liaison, or if they're going to appoint somebody, I'll just keep coming anyway.
Are you applying for the board? Are you applying to the UCRA board?
My term ends at the end of December.
No, I know, but to the UCRA board.
I'm going to apply, but so are a dozen other
people.
Yeah,
I'm applying too.
The other is there's supposed to be someone representing multifamily dwelling interests, but we have reached out to Mayor Steve Noble just because I think there's more of that in Kingston to see if he can come up with some recommendations to the legislature for that. So
I would love for us to have like some clear objectives as to like what would make us feel successful at the end of our term together.
Yeah, for me, I mean, personally speaking, I would like to I would like to ground ourselves in our charge, so receive the reports, work as an oversight committee, working with the agency, and then I think it would be fantastic if we could make some headway on, increasing mandated. And then I think also headway on if we could push that percentage, like we'll get numbers, but I want to see those go up by, you know, to me, those are the objectives that I have personally.
If I could add, maybe it would be a good charge for this committee to do some research on the CMD, because I think there's some agreement that that is low-hanging fruit.
CMD?
And
construction and demolition debris.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
I intended to have that in place before I left the legislature, but I also didn't want to jump the gun in terms of we have to have a place to take it. There is a facility in Orange County, Taylor, that takes CMD, but it's my understanding that part of the reuse innovation Repower program includes a C&D recycling facility.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather see a facility in place before we try to ask the legislature mm-hmm. to pass legislation.
Yeah.
And even then, I think it has to be
right.
phased in.
We want that to be successful.
Yeah. If the first phase doesn't work, then you don't go on until you correct it. Yeah.
But they did hire somebody, you know, to be in charge of the Reuse Innovation Center at
they
the last meeting.
Hired somebody.
They hired somebody, and yeah. they are still looking for a facility.
I like that, but why wouldn't UCRA be the ones that we would cast with that job of looking into it?
They do have that job.
I think well, we have a facility, and I want to know why
so
that is.
So that would be something that we would give them directive
they
to
have
do,
a facility?
Right?
At New Paltz.
Yeah. At New Paltz.
Yeah.
There's a reuse facility.
As their oversight.
Yeah, well, we don't have, I guess, I think it's the yes and. I think
this could be so much better.
We can ask them if it's something they've been considering and what knowledge they have of it, but I think part of, because we can't tell them what to do, in we can't say we want you to do research on this. I think in terms of like if we are, and we can all think about this more, but if one of our jobs is to like make recommendations and work on mandated recyclables, which we also do in concert with them. So they, in order for them to have any of that, they come to us and then we have to approve their recommendations. So I'm just saying, I think it's still useful for us to do what we can, because what we want is a successful program.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
but what we come up with is recommendations for legislation.
Yeah.
And that goes to the legislature through the Energy Environment Committee.
Oh, that's right.
So it should be done in cooperation with the agency, because they're responsible for handling the waste. But in terms of your goal, it would be to make a recommendation to the legislature if
right.
it's going to be added as
yes.
a mandatory recycle.
This is a little peripheral, but I'm curious. You might know, Jonathan. So the roll-off container companies have not been subject to direction, right? So you're taking in a whole new group of companies if we start.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is it's a big deal.
It'd be a new market, yeah.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. you have to have a place, you know, you have to know you can take it someplace.
On a small scale, a lot of these companies, you know, I'll use the example of waste management, and us for that, you know, I had this conversation this morning. There's a term called transfer station mining. It's not a... It's first of all, it's the practice is sort of suspect, and it's not safe because you've got an active tipping floor, there's not a lot of, you know, if it's quiet, there's time to pull metal out of the loads and scavenge for anything else that would be non-combustible or recyclable, if you will, that has, you know, so that does occur, but just. It's, you know, and I asked this question this morning. We had a roll-off meeting this morning. Is it profitable? Not really. It's pulling some of the, again, a lot of the trash in Dutchess goes to incineration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could talk about incineration for the rest of the time we're meeting together here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great idea.
Probably.
Unfortunately, right now, that's what it is. That'll change over the course of the next few years, but that's, I don't want to go down that wormhole
it's
right now.
It's against the law in Ulster.
Well, it's just not a great idea. Landfilling is still much better.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but it's also a pollutant source.
Yeah.
Yeah, but landfill is still very polluting.
Sure it is. Sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, to try to give you a little insight into it, you know, we kind of, you know, if you look at the way these the demo box is going to be loaded with a myriad of materials. Okay, and there might be one very small exception to that.
Paint cans.
Yeah, paint cans, caulk tubes, PVC, copper scrap,
cushion,
aluminum
everything.
Studs,
yeah.
Wood, plastic, Tyvek,
yeah.
Foam foam insulation, lunch garbage from the guys, you know, 3 meals a day, 6 days a week. I mean, that box is a it's a veritable smorgasbord of materials. So, and that's a demo box. So, and then rubble and everything else. Yeah. Not to, I don't even have to mention sheetrock.
Yeah.
But they're phasing that out anyway. You know, there's so many other products they use now.
Yeah.
So, you put their, you know, their fiber boards and different kinds of materials. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one exception to that I'm going to think would, but what about a Leeds project? What about a project? Leeds is sort of the
Leeds certified,
yeah.
Environmentally certified.
Yeah. In summary, like what it is it means you're going to segregate your waste streams at the job site,
right.
And try to direct, you know, the wood over here, PVC here, rubble over there, metal over here, and it's each, they're going to have dedicated boxes. And you know, I see it all the time, and you know, a lot of these, a lot of the budgets for the construction, the loans are contingent upon this being a Leeds project. Mm-hmm. Now that looks great on paper, and that looks great from a, you know, an administrative approach. But the reality of it is, how much of this is really being won? You know, is it in compliance?
Mm-hmm.
How much is there any enforcement to this? Right. Is, you know, is there someone who's, you know, they want reports issued about this, you know. So that's an area that I think needs to be looked mm-hmm. at, you know. And that's, you know, I didn't want to, this is just going to touch the tip of that iceberg tonight, because I don't, like yeah. I said, we could yeah. spend the rest of our time together, that we'll be together talking about this.
Well, at least they're starting at the right place.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Wanting to
yeah.
conserve energy.
Yeah. So, and I think it's a great idea to have, you know, yeah. the, you know, the UCRA folks here, you know, to give us a little more insight as we, like you say, mm-hmm. move into our understanding of what we want to accomplish. I think it's the question's a little bit early yet. What do we mm-hmm. really want to accomplish
yeah.
here? But
uh-huh.
I like where you're going with it, and it makes sense. I mean, as a committee, you know, concerned with our priority is recycling, then this is the great place to start, and having these conversations and getting the folks in here. We all have a lot of questions, myself included, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, the first couple of meetings I think will be a little bit of a little chaotic, but I think we're headed in the right direction. I think it's working out.
Do you see areas of potential profit in recycling businesses?
You mean businesses that don't yet exist, or, you know,
that don't exist in this county?
Potentially. Again, it's all based on the market. You know, what's
right.
Wall Street doing tomorrow?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, there is some uncertainty. This is a bad time of year to ask that question. Yeah, I mean, how are your stocks doing October, November, December? You know, mine are okay,
they
but I'm diversified. Ask me in like March or April.
Yeah.
It's going to be a boom. It's yeah. going to be great. But right now, so it's really just market driven, you know. There's, mm-hmm. you know, and the other thing too is, you know, with regards to recycling, and Manager, you'll agree with this, you know, if the manufacturers are using these compostable products, these reusable, high-quality products that can be reclaimed and reused,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
Right.
But
right.
they're using these, you know, for lack of a better term,
crap.
Useless crap
yeah.
that's not, it's, what is it? Is it recyclable? No. You know, I mean, these landscape pots, the black high-density plastic, can't recycle.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I throw tons of these things away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
right.
it all ends
that
up.
That is a huge waste.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's just the beginning, so. When you have this linear cradle to grave approach to, you know, recycling, you're never going to get out of this.
Yeah.
But once you get that cycle going, where it's a higher quality product, mm-hmm. it's going to cost a little bit more.
Yeah.
But and we as consumers are going to insist on these products, then you're going to have that. You're going to have, you know, you're going to drive the needle
mm-hmm.
in that direction. So, and that's, it starts here.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Great.
Okay. One more, and then...
Yeah.
Oh, did you?
No. I was just thinking that it would... I know there's some things that I want to research and report back. I don't know if there's things that we all want to take on so that we can come back, like researching what's successful in other places that we're not doing here, or specifically with construction materials or different areas.
That reminds me. We said at the first meeting that we wanted to go to one of the MRFs to see it operating, but we never really.
That's one thing.
That's kind of goes to what you're saying.
Sure,
it gives us
a
better
picture
of what the realities are on the, you know, on the
you
conveyor
can probably
belt.
Go to the one at the UCRA anytime. I've toured that, and
not
we toured
anytime,
the.
Yeah, I think have has everyone toured the UCRA?
No.
Okay, so. Yeah. I've done it a few times, but we can set something up for anyone that would like to.
And you have to wear toed shoes.
You have to wear shoes, huh?
And I think it's worth
no open-toed shoes.
For anyone who hasn't been to the one in Beacon.
Yes.
And it would be an interesting comparison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the
maybe...
The one in Beacon, we were very
impressed. I was blown away
really?
By it, yeah. Mm.
The Beacon, you see, the Beacon Light.
MRI. What is it called?
It's MRI. Called, it's RE Community, R-E Community. And RE is just really sort of an acronym for Republic Services. And they're very receptive to tours and groups.
Do you guys think it would be useful to schedule these as a committee for anyone that can attend so that we're there together? I mean, I've done the UCRA tour, but I think if... You know, questions and comments come up that can be useful. But I've never gone to the RE Community Center before. What do you guys think?
A field trip?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll see. We are a public body, so I'll see what we can do. And then in terms of like, I think one thing for me, I mean, I have a very busy job and I chair another board that keeps me very busy. In terms of like, I would encourage some in terms of, like, I don't know how much capacity or time you have, but I think this getting some numbers from UCRA, I think will help inform goals and research. So I think I think where you were going is a good direction, but I also don't want you to do something and then it turns out that that's my only comment is I think starting with getting reporting and having those conversations, getting the information that we think could help inform our work will help us get some direction too. So if that answers your question.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I have.
Great.
So I'll entertain a motion to adjourn at 6:41.
So moved.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, abstained.
Man, at one of our larger meetings.